This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
You can power up your playtime with the Nintendo Switch system, the home of Mario and friends. You may discover exciting surprises with Mario, Princess Peach, and more in Super Mario Bros. Wonder, or challenge friends to a race in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. You can head to Nintendo.com to learn more about the Nintendo Switch system. Games and systems sold separately.
I'm Margaret Brennan in Washington, and this week on Face the Nation, breaking overnight, a U.S. F-22 shoots down a third unidentified aerial object in the skies over northwestern Canada. And fighter jets are scrambled following a curious radar signal over Montana. What are these incursions all about? Just one day after U.S. fighter jets shot down a high-altitude airborne object over Alaska, on Saturday, an unidentified item was taken down over the Yukon Territory of Canada. Debris recovery for both objects are underway as the FBI continues its analysis of what's left of that Chinese spy balloon that was shot down a week ago off the coast of South Carolina. We'll talk with two key lawmakers, House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul and Senator John Tester. Saturday night, the military sent fighter aircraft to investigate what it called a radar anomaly over Tester's home state of Montana. Frustration is mounting on Capitol Hill about what's going on here and what more we can do to head off these intrusions. Plus, we heard the president's take on the State of the Union, but as the nation's governors convene in Washington, we'll check in with four of them on the state of their states and the challenges that they're facing. And as the death toll grows in Turkey and Syria, we'll have the latest on recovery efforts and share our perspective on some of these global threats. It's all just ahead on Face the Nation. Good morning and welcome to Face the Nation. As we come on the air, the big question in our minds today is, what is going on here with what seemed like a deluge of potential incursions? What are these objects? Where are they coming from? What is their purpose? And are we experiencing an increase of the so-called unidentified aerial objects, or are we just looking for them more carefully following the Chinese spy balloon event? We will do our best to try and get some of those questions answered today. We are going to begin with Montana's Senator John Tester. Good morning to you, Senator.
Good morning.
So late Saturday. NORAD and NORTHCOM said there was a radar anomaly over your state, which is why airspace was closed. Was it a false alarm, or is there an object over Montana?
Well, I think the investigation is still going on as we speak. The truth is that there was an anomaly, and they've investigated. I think it got dark last night, so they couldn't fully check it out. I'm sure, well, as we speak, it's being checked out right now.
So it hasn't been ruled out. There may still be something up there.
Absolutely. There may still be something up there. It may be a false alarm.
Is the policy now to shoot down any unidentified object?
Well, I think that's a very, very good question, and that's a better question for General Milley. But the truth of the matter is that they need to have a policy. They, being the military, needs to have a policy to recommend to the president. It's something that, as Chairman of the Defense Committee and Ranking Member Collins, we've already talked about this. We're going to make sure that there is a plan. We're going to make sure if that plan needs to be funded, that it gets funded. This is what's gone on the last, 2 weeks or so, 10 days, has been nothing short of craziness, and the military needs to have a plan to not only determine what's out there, but determine the dangers that go with it.
So you don't know what will happen to this object over Montana?
My guess is it'll get shot down, but Okay. The military will make an assessment as to potential collateral damage, just like they did on the Chinese spy balloon.
So you have spent time, as I understand it, with General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and other DOD officials. Could he share with you anything about this mysterious object that was cylindrical and floating over Canada, or the car-sized one over Alaska?
Well, I think you've got what he shared with me at that moment in time, and that they had done an assessment of it and determined that it was unmanned, and determined that it should be shot down because they weren't absolutely positive that it was of no threat.
So the object over Alaska was near Prudhoe Bay, which is one of the most important energy fields in this country.
Yes.
Does that sound to you like it's espionage, state-driven espionage?
Well, look, I don't think things happen by mistake when it comes to China.
You think this was China?
I don't know. I don't know that it's China. We will find out later on if, in fact, it was affiliated with the Chinese communist government or not. But the bottom line is that I think we need to take these things seriously. I think the president and I think, more importantly, the military are taking them very, very seriously. And to back that up, I think through the appropriations process and the Defense Committee, we're going to make sure that they're taking it seriously. So the checks and balances will be there as we move forward. But this is, like I said, this has been a phenomenon that we haven't had recently, where we've had other countries that have went into our airspace for the purpose of trying to gather information on what we're doing here in the United States.
You said, and you underscored your key role in helping to determine the budget there for the Pentagon, that you don't remember hearing anything that dealt with balloons. How long has the military actually been tracking this?
Well, I mean, that's a better question for the military from my perspective.
But they weren't sharing it with Congress.
They weren't sharing it with me. And so I can't say what their awareness was over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. But obviously there was some awareness. But whether it was up to where it needed to be, that's a debate that Congress needs to have and questions that need to be answered by our military leadership.
You were very critical. You made that very clear and plain spoken about the fact that administration didn't shoot down the confirmed Chinese spy balloon over the state of Montana. And you wanted it shot down as soon as it was in U.S. airspace. Has your view changed at all after you've been briefed?
Yeah, well, so initially I was very much for shooting it down when it was over the Aleutians. I think what transpired is that the military took assessments as to potential collateral damage and the threat of this balloon. And, we pay these folks good money to make sure we keep our nation safe. And I respect their view. And the president followed that. Mm-hmm. Going on in the future, I think there needs to be a plan that's right up front so we know exactly what's going to happen when these balloons come in and their threat is assessed. What's going to happen? But look, I got briefed both an open session and a classified session, and quite honestly, the military and intelligence community's explanation of what transpired with that balloon, I accept. Mm-hmm. Is it something that I would have done right out of the chute? No, I would have probably done it different. But that's not saying that I'm right or I'm wrong or they're right or they're wrong.
Right.
In the end, we ended up with a balloon that they've recovered and they're going to take and put it back together and reverse engineer it, and we'll find out what they're up to, plus the information that was gathered while it came across the United States.
So I hear you say there's value in that intelligence.
Yes.
But in terms of damage, according to what was declassified, that Chinese balloon could intercept signals intelligence. It could pick up chatter. It hovered over some pretty key states, locations in your state, including one that houses, 150 intercontinental ballistic missiles.
No doubt about that.
Was there damage done?
No doubt about that, and there better not have been damage done, or it makes my case for shooting a doggone thing down over the Aleutian Islands. Look, we've got ICBMs in Montana. We've got 150 of them. Malmstrom Air Force Base is an incredible deterrent for this country and has been since the early 60s. The military made an assessment that they wouldn't be able to gather the information that the military thought was important to China.
Yeah.
And if that didn't happen that way, somebody screwed up.
You, on the issue of China, according to the federal government, 3% of the nation's farmland is owned by foreign investors.
Yes.
You have recently introduced a bill to try to restrict foreign ownership of farmland. I know this is an issue in a number of farming states. Why do you think that needs to be a federal ban on foreign ownership?
Well, look, I'm a farmer. I've been farming my grandparents' land that they homesteaded. I think it's really important for food security. The folks, this is a ban against China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran, folks who don't want to see us exist anymore as a nation. I don't think they should have any opportunity to try to dictate our food supply or
any Chinese-owned company, period.
Right, period, done. Because they're all connected with the communist Chinese government anyway. And so I think it's a reasonable step to take. Senator Rounds out of South Dakota does too, so it's bipartisan. And I think we should do it as a matter of course. And I'm all about private property rights. I think people ought to be able to sell who they want to sell to, but not in this particular case because China wants to do bad things to us. Same thing with North Korea, Russia, and Iran. So let's take that off the table, both in farmland and in agribusinesses. I think it'd be a mistake, really a mistake for national security and for food security.
Senator Tester, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Good to have you here in person. And joining us now is David Martin, our national security correspondent. David, you've been listening to this conversation. Mm-hmm. When you speak to the Pentagon, are they any more clear on whether it is now established U.S. policy to shoot down any UFO over North America?
I don't think they have a policy. I think if a balloon like, or an object like the last two, Friday and Saturday, is impinging on commercial aviation space, these both were up at about 40,000 feet, which is just the edge of commercial aviation. And if you don't know what they're doing, then you shoot. And that's what they did in these two cases.
It's an expensive habit.
It's an expensive habit, and also it may be a bad habit because you don't want to shoot first and ask questions later. Mm-hmm. But at least now that they're down, we're going to get some answers. The Canadian Prime Minister says he has a ground search team at the wreckage that went down over Canada. They are not yet at the wreckage that went down just off northern Alaska. Because they're dealing with something like minus 45 degree temperatures, but sooner or later, we'll get that wreckage and we'll know.
What do we call these? They're being called objects because the military doesn't really have a term they want to share with the public about them. Are they balloons? What are they?
I would call them balloon-like objects. They do not appear to have any maneuvering capability. They appear to be floating along at the speed of the wind. I just don't have a better word for that than balloon-like.
And the prime suspect is China.
I wouldn't say that.
No?
I wouldn't say that, no. The prevailing wind brings everything that way, from west, east, across northern Alaska and northern Canada. And there is a lot of what officials call sky trash up there. And sky trash includes balloons that are put up by governments, that are put up by corporations, that are put up by research institutes, and probably just by private individuals. Mm-hmm. And not for nefarious purposes, but just to collect scientific data. In the past, the U.S. just hasn't paid much attention to those balloons. But this Chinese balloon was a game changer.
Yeah.
And now, certainly the Biden administration does not feel it can simply let these other objects pass through American airspace.
There were reports out of China about preparing to shoot down objects in their airspace. I know when you were here last week, you warned about the risk of miscalculation.
Sure. I was talking about reconnaissance flights. So we don't, as far as I know, penetrate Chinese airspace with our flights, but just do it around the periphery. Chinese have a history of coming out and buzzing those planes, and sometimes it gets pretty darn close. And now, in the wake of this balloon incident, you wonder how much closer it's going to get and whether the U.S. needs to take precautions. I asked the Secretary of Defense about that in an interview this week, and he just, said, you can be sure we are going to take all measures necessary to protect our planes.
And I imagine that's one of the things he wanted to speak to the defense minister about, although that phone call was not answered by his Chinese counterpart. David, thank you.
Sure thing.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
We go now to Congressman Michael McCaul. He is the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Good morning to you.
Morning, Margaret. Thanks for having me.
I want to start on this unusual activity, 3 takedowns in 8 days. In the case of the spy balloon, this was Chinese surveillance, according to the administration. On Friday, they put restrictions on 6 Chinese companies that allegedly helped China's military build that balloon. Is this the right move to just try to make it harder for them to get U.S. technology, or does Congress need to do something that's more broad?
Well, it's certainly the right move. It will be one of my number one priorities as the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee in this Congress to stop the export of technology to China that then goes into their most advanced weapon systems. In this case, a sophisticated spy balloon that went across 3 nuclear sites, I think it's important to say, in plain view of the American people. You know, in Montana, the Triad site, air, land, and sea nuclear weapons. In Omaha, this spy balloon went over our Strategic Command, which is our most sensitive nuclear site. It was so sensitive that President Bush was taken there after 9/11. And then finally, Missouri, the B-2 bomber, that's where they are placed. It did a lot of damage.
Is that what U.S. intelligence told you? They've been saying they mitigated the impact.
They say they mitigated it, but my assessment, and I can't get into the detail of the intelligence document, is that if it's still transmitting, going over these 3 very sensitive nuclear sites, I think if you look at the flight pattern of the balloon, it tells a story as to what the Chinese were up to as they controlled this aircraft throughout the United States. Going over those sites, in my judgment, would cause great damage. Remember, a balloon can see a lot more on the ground than a satellite.
So you said you want to try to stop the export of technology that can be used by China's military. As a conservative, though, how much this has to make you a little uncomfortable to have government try to control private business investment? How do you do that?
Well, we have what's called an entities list, a Department of Commerce. I have jurisdiction over the office within there. The Department of Defense has one. We need to harmonize those, make it more security focused. Capital flows is one issue, but technology exports into China that they use to turn, that may eventually turn against us. We have to stop doing that. And I think we can do it by sectors. Mm-hmm. They do it by companies now. Obviously, they identified the six. I think shockingly, when the balloon was recovered, it had American-made component parts in there with English on that. It was made, parts made in America that were put on a spy balloon from China. I don't think the American people accept that.
Do you believe that this was a strategic choice by Xi Jinping's government in Beijing, or do you believe that it was just the left and right hand not knowing what was going on?
When I saw the sights that it was flying over, it was very clear to me this was an intentional act. It was done with provocation to gather intelligence data and collect intelligence on our three major nuclear sites in this country. Why? Because they're looking at what is our capability in the event of a possible future conflict in Taiwan. They're really assessing what we have in this country. I find it extraordinary the timing of this flight as well, mm-hmm. Right before the State of the Union speech, and also, right before Secretary Blinken was scheduled to meet with Chairman Xi. I think it was very much an act of belligerence on their part. And perhaps they don't care what the American people think about that.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you, you voted in the last Congress to provide a lot of assistance to Ukraine. But this past week, at least 10 of your members, Republican members, introduced a bill called the Ukraine Fatigue Resolution to try to cut off aid. How hard is it going to be to have a Republican-led House continue to help Ukraine?
I still believe, Margaret, there are many on both sides of the aisle, majority of the majorities in support of this. We have factions on the left and right that do not support Ukraine.
This was a Republican bill.
That will probably continue. Right. And I do think, for me particularly, it's we have to educate where has the money gone. The audits that are in place right now, there are four of them on Ukraine funding. And we have to explain why is Ukraine so important. What happens in Ukraine impacts Taiwan and Chairman Xi. That China's aligned with Russia, Iran, and North Korea against freedom, democracy, and the West. And, I think that's a debate we'll have, but I still feel very confident that we will give them the assistance they need. I'd like to see it faster so they can win this faster.
So you think Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, others who signed this need to be educated?
We took Marjorie Taylor Greene into a briefing. She was satisfied, I thought, with what the controls have been put in place on the spending. But I don't think that they will ever be persuaded that this cause is something that they would support. I think they have this false dichotomy that somehow we can't help Ukraine, beat back the Russians who invaded their country and secure the border. We can do both. We're a great nation. And the fact of the matter is, unfortunately, this administration has chosen not to secure the border. He can't even control and secure our airspace now, it looks like.
Congressman McCaul, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Margaret. Thanks for having me.
Face the Nation will be back in 1 minute. Stay with us.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The death toll from that massive earthquake in Turkey and Syria continues to climb. There are now more than 28,000 dead, and the UN says they expect that number to double or more. Our MTS Tayyip reports from Turkey.
There are no words for this kind of grief. But for the tens of thousands whose loved ones were also killed in the quake, it's a gut-wrenching agony they all share. An agony that has touched every street and every corner of the southeastern city of Hatay, one of the hardest hit by Monday's 7.8 magnitude quake and the powerful aftershocks that followed. These rescue workers remain determined to keep looking for survivors, even as the hope of finding someone alive slips away with every passing minute.
It's been 7 days now, and despite the exhaustion, the cold, and the sadness, these men say they're determined to keep searching.
So too are these rescuers as they carefully sift through the ruins of an apartment block. But then, their worst fear, as dislodged chunks of concrete and twisted metal start raining down on top of them. One emergency worker was moderately injured, the rest unharmed. For survivors who have already buried their loved ones, the sadness is all-consuming, as more fresh graves are dug up in anticipation of mass burials to come. The scale of the devastation continues to defy comprehension. International aid is now pouring in from around 45 countries, including the U.S. But for badly devastated Syria, just two convoys have made it into the northwestern Idlib province, the last remaining rebel-held territory in a nation already torn apart by more than a decade of civil war. This week, the U.S. Treasury announced it would ease sanctions on the Syrian government for 180 days as part of efforts to speed up humanitarian assistance. But President Bashar al-Assad insists on handling all the aid shipments himself, including to rebel-held territories, a major concern for most international donors who remain slow in committing support. So for now, most of what's crossing the border into Syria from Turkey are the remains of Syrian refugees killed in the earthquake, a country they once had to flee in order to save their lives, now only to return in death.
MTS Tayyip reporting from Turkey. We'll be right back with a lot more Face the Nation. Stay with us. Be sure to join us next Sunday. We'll be talking with Bernie Sanders, two-time Democratic presidential contender and Vermont independent senator. That's next Sunday on Face the Nation. When we come back, we'll be talking with four of our nation's governors. And we'll start off with New Hampshire Republican Governor Chris Sununu, who is also eyeing a possible presidential run in 2024. We'll ask him about that and a lot more, so stay with us. Welcome back to Face the Nation. We're joined now by the Republican governor of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu. And it's good to have you here.
Thanks.
In person.
Great to be here. Better here than the rest of Washington, because this whole town gives me the chills sometimes.
Well, you might need to go get over that if you're going to run for 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, as apparently you are considering doing.
Well, look, a lot of opportunity to change things, right? I think New Hampshire has this awesome model of live free or die. Limited government, local control, individual responsibility, really putting the voters first. Send them some money, which is nice, but send them the regulatory authority, too. So a little decentralizing out of Washington and maybe a little better attitude would be a good thing for America.
What's the proactive reason you want to be president? Not something that President Biden's doing wrong, but Sure. Something you want to achieve.
Yeah. Which is the right question you're asking, by the way, because it drives me crazy when Republicans talk in an echo chamber about, you know, how bad, you know, the president is and Democrats. We got the memo as Republicans. You got to be for something. What I'm trying to do is kind of show that New Hampshire model, show the opportunity to get stuff done. I've had Republicans in my legislature, I have Democrats in my legislature. I always get my conservative agendas done. We always cut taxes. We always balance a budget. And I can explain to folks in Washington what a balanced budget actually means. Mm-hmm. So there are paths. And I think America is looking for results. We need results-driven leadership, not just leadership
like
whether it's cutting taxes, being pro-business, the regulatory reform, the immigration stuff that we were told was going to happen in 2017 and 2018 as Republicans, and it didn't. We were told health care reform would happen. It didn't. We were told we were going to secure the border, and we didn't. So there's all this great opportunity that has a domino effect. They're not just things to check off a list, but those things have huge impacts on the American economy and, most importantly, American families, right? They just want flexibility to do what they do. And frankly, they're tired of the nonsense in D.C. They're tired of extreme candidates. They're tired of gridlock. They want somebody to come to the table. And it could be myself. It could be other governors. But it has to be leadership with proven results. I've been in the private sector as an engineer and a business leader. I've been in the public sector. You got to be able to deliver. And you got to hopefully be inspirational and hopeful as opposed to all this negativity you see.
But you still have to get the Congress to work with you to do that very long laundry list of things you just read off to us. So when you were here in November, you told us that President Biden would not run for president, in your estimation. You just saw him up close for the past few days. Is that still what you believe?
Well, I know other people will definitely run. They're going to get in the
Democrats,
race.
Democrats, you believe?
Oh, absolutely.
Will challenge
him. Yeah. Because
why do you say that? Did someone tell you that in the last few days?
Well, Joe Biden has tried to move the first in the nation primary from New Hampshire. Right. But we're going first, whether the president likes it or not. And so that's going to be a huge opportunity for anybody who wants to step up and challenge him. And if you look at the polls across the country, the average Democrat says, yeah, thanks for your service on one term, but let's keep it to one term, President Biden. And I just don't believe the Democrat left wing elite is going to sit on the sidelines knowing you could come to New Hampshire, get all the earned media, all the attention without a whole lot of money, all that political momentum. He's opened up his political flank, so to say, to give someone else a huge opportunity to charge right through and take that nomination from him.
Well, we'll see if your projection plays out. You've been talking about trying to sort of remind the party that Republicans are about limited government.
Yeah.
You said recently Republicans are almost trying to outdo Democrats at their own game of being big government and having a solution and a say on everything. Who are you thinking of when you say that?
There's a lot. Like, I think there's a lot of leadership out there that forgets. At heart, I'm a principled free market conservative. Let the markets decide. So there's no individual per se, but there's a lot of leadership that says, you know what? When we're not getting that result out of a private business or a locality, we'll just impose from the top down our conservative will.
You're not talking about the Florida governor and Disney, for example.
That's a bad example. Yeah, that's an example. One of the many examples.
Ron DeSantis may be running for president as well.
Yeah. Look, Ron's a very good governor. He is. But I'm just trying to remind folks what we are at our core. And if we're trying to beat the Democrats at being big government authoritarians, remember what's going to happen. Eventually, they'll have power in a state or in a position, and then they'll start penalizing conservative businesses and conservative nonprofits and conservative ideas. That is the worst precedent in the world. That's exactly what the founding fathers tried to avoid. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to remind my conservative friends about federalism, free markets, and being for the voter first, being for the individual. Do I like what every private business does? No. I hate this woke cancel culture. But it's a cultural.
What does that mean to you then?
Woke cancel culture?
Yeah.
Oh, it's look.
Because you're not a culture warrior.
No.
Really.
No. But it's there.
What does that mean on your platform?
It's the divisiveness we see not just in our schools, but in our communities, where it is me versus you. Whereas if you are not adhering to my ideals, then I'm going to cancel you out. It is us versus them. It's this binary where everything's a war. That's a cultural problem we have to fix in America, and it starts with good leadership. Good messaging, more hopeful and optimistic, but government never solves a cultural problem.
Okay,
we can lead on it, but we never solve it.
Interesting idea, but you are contradicted by the Republican governor of Arkansas who gave the response for your party after the State of the Union, who embraced culture war. She says America's in one.
Yes, we are.
She says it's being waged by the left wing, a woke mob that can't even tell you what a woman is.
That's absolutely right.
And are you going to engage on things like this, like Sanders and DeSantis has in terms of issues on gender and issues of race?
There should be absolute leadership on that, about what that's about. And this idea that, you know, you have to, you know, we have forced language, that we have forced ideas on our kids, that we're going to force anything.
So you are going to be a culture warrior.
No, we have to talk about that. But it isn't the government's role to solve it. The government is not here to solve your problems. It's not. The government is here to create
as many doors. So a governor shouldn't be actually talking and engaging and telling school boards and doing things like this or trying to pass laws like they are?
I don't think governors should be trying to pass laws to subvert the will of the voters that know better than us. Voters know more than I do. The voters on that school board know. The voters in those towns know a lot more. And if that's the free market of politics, if they don't like the school board, they go to town meeting, they fire them.
You call yourself a pro-choice Republican. You still have to win in a Republican primary. Is there room for someone who calls himself a pro-choice Republican?
Oh, yeah. That issue is going to change three different ways now that Dobbs has happened, right? States can decide what they want to do. do, right? So I think the definition of pro-life and pro-choice and pro-abortion are going to be very different, because if you're a pro-life Republican, that's fine. That's, as a governor, you can do that. You can ban it in your state, and you can stand behind those ideals. And maybe that's exactly what your state wants. No problem. Mm-hmm. I'm a pro-choice Republican in a very pro-choice state. But at the end of the day, you're going to have the pro-life over here, pro-abortion over here. And then the rest of us are, well, we have a 24-week ban and you have a 22-week and an 18-week ban. So the rest of us are kind of in this spectrum of debating about weeks. So that the whole conversation is going to change.
We want to talk about some of these issues in depth with you in a moment. So stay with us, Governor. And we're going to bring in a panel of bipartisan governors with us.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back with Governor Sununu, and we're joined by Democrat Wes Moore, who was just sworn in as Maryland's first black governor. Michelle Lujan Grisham is the Democratic governor of New Mexico. Republican Doug Burgum is the governor of North Dakota. And it's good to have you all here at the table together.
Yes. Thanks for having us.
Great to be with you.
Too.
I want to talk about some of these issues of common cause. Governor Burgum, I know the fentanyl crisis, the drug crisis was a topic at the White House in recent days. Your state is one of six with the lowest rates of drug overdose deaths, according to the CDC. How is that possible when this is a national crisis?
Well, I think all of our governors, we're all border states now with the fentanyl that's coming into this country, perhaps manufactured in China, coming across the southern border. But in North Dakota, we've really taken an approach of understanding that if you're going to have a war on drugs, which is this thing we've been doing in our country since the 1970s and 80s, it can become a war on people who have a health issue. They've got addiction is a disease. And so we want to be very tough on the people that are importing and distributing. But we also have to understand that if people have the disease of addiction, it's not a moral choice or a failure. And so we've taken an approach on a number of fronts. One of the things that's been most successful is treating the disease of addiction is with peer support specialists, because we know now that someone who's got lived experience, whether that's in the criminal justice system or living with the disease of addiction and in recovery, that they can help people through it as much as an addiction counselor. So the whole approach is we've turned it towards one of treating this as a national health crisis, which it is. So we want to be tough on suppliers, but we want to be super supportive of those
really
that are dealing with it.
I really appreciate that approach. That is probably going to be the nexus of real bipartisan work. In New Mexico, we have a significant issue with substance abuse and overdose deaths. And I wish I could tell you that fentanyl is not a problem. It is. And in fact, we were part of a FBI sting with one of the largest fentanyl busts in United States history. 1 million pills, 2 million in cash. But we didn't have any behavioral health system when I became governor. The former administration literally canceled behavioral health. And there were no providers. They were all in litigation. Everybody left to other states. So now you have a crisis on top of a national building crisis that COVID did none of us any favors to really address. Evidence-based work about making sure that treatment is available is exactly how we're going to get ahead of this. So all of the upfront, so dealing with poverty and food security and jobs and workers and good education while we're treating folks who are currently dealing with this disease. And I think we can start to do that regionally with creative solutions that allow Medicaid to pay for services across states when it's behavioral health. And we've eliminated copays for behavioral health services.
And this is something you're asking the federal government for help to do?
You know, I didn't actually do that during that, it's a limited who can ask questions, and that sounds awful. We want to make sure that we're all benefiting by a topic matter that we can all take back with us and get a sense where the federal government is headed. But the Western Governors Association, which is another really effective example about bipartisan work, we're interested in taking on behavioral health in a more regional effort, and following some of the best practices of North Dakota absolutely is going to make its way into achievements and better outcomes in New Mexico.
Governor Moore, I mean, you're new on the job, but what is it that you plan to execute to deal with this problem?
Well, you know, I think what was said here is a really important point, where we cannot go through the process, the idea that we're going to criminalize our way out of this. And I think we've learned that throughout this process, that we're dealing with behavioral health and mental health. When you look at the proposed budget that we laid out, our proposed budget makes historic increases of 39%, that's actually focusing exclusively on substance abuse disorders, on making sure that we're actually helping people when they're returning from incarceration, things like how are we dealing with elements of record expungement, job retraining, job reskilling, making sure there's a better reintegration with the family. But there has to be a larger holistic way in the way that we are dealing with this challenge, because it is true, we have spent two decades now dealing with a behavioral health challenge, essentially by criminalizing it. And there are long-term consequences, economic consequences, societal consequences that I know in the state of Maryland that we are aggressively pushing on within the way our administration is looking at this work.
We were looking at some of the research, and in Maryland, in one county, they've had to use Narcan on students 11 times the past year.
That's
and you're
right.
actually putting this in the schools because this is so common?
Because we have to. And that's the thing. As an administration, I always say, you know, as a leader, I am data driven and heart led. Right. I wear my heart on my sleeve, but I don't move without data. And the data has been so clear about the damage that this has done to our communities, both urban and rural.
And I mean, children, apparently.
And children. And to the point where we've actually now appointed a special secretary who's a former mayor of Hagerstown, who actually got into politics because of the issue of opioid addiction, had her best friend lost to an overdose, who is now serving as our special secretary on this exact issue.
You were nodding at the Narcan in schools.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, one of the biggest issues is...
This is a drug when someone overdoses to basically help them
survive. And Narcan works for the most part. We can talk about where it doesn't work, but schools. You need access points to schools. Kids need to know that that there is help there, what those systems are. Rural access to care is absolutely huge. People have to understand it's not a 28-day problem, right? That's old school thinking. Sometimes recovery is a lifelong journey, so you need recovery-friendly workplaces. You need wraparound housing and those types of services. Understand that also the fentanyl crisis, it's now being mixed with everything. It's in vape cartridges. It's in marijuana. It's being mixed with xylazine. And let me tell you, if you don't understand the xylazine fentanyl crisis that's coming, it's horrid. It negates the ability of Narcan to revive you. And it's the mixing of everything, I call it a cartel-driven crisis now. It's no longer over-prescription. That's always part of it. But the cartels have such access, and they're basically creating their own markets. They're putting it in Adderall. They're mixing it with black market Adderall. They're mixing it with Xanax.
How are people buying it?
Black market. As inflation goes up, more people go to buy their pharmaceuticals offline. And so they're going to get Adderall for the kids offline. It becomes mixed. Or the kids try to buy vape cartridges offline, and it becomes mixed with fentanyl. And the dealers know, look, we might lose a couple, but we're going to create addicts out of it. And so the crisis is the mixing, where we have so many folks that overdose that had no idea they were even doing fentanyl.
But we need to be careful, in my view, that we don't do this paradigm, you know, just shifting from one extreme to the other. Absolutely, organized crime and cartels, which are embedded in every state, have to be held accountable, and we all collectively. That's a federal and state-by-state issue.
And you have asked the federal government for more FBI agents.
I have.
And they denied you that request.
Well,
I'm
tenacious. I'm bet on me. I'm going to get those agents. But to your point, if we were all using our National Guard to some degree, we need them for our own state emergencies. But if we were doing drug interdiction work, then we're dealing with the bad guys and gals in this system, and we need to do that collectively. Instead, we're doing it, I do a little, you do a little, we should be doing it collectively. That's the right kind of leveraging.
One thing that we've stopped even using the word overdose, because no one is making a choice
to kill themselves. As Chris was saying, I mean, these people don't know what they're taking. We have an epidemic of just huge proportions like we've never had before. And you talked about FBI. One of the things that's happening across the Western U.S. on all of the tribal lands, like the sovereign nations that we share geography with in North Dakota, is they don't have enough BI agents. The federal government, FBI, so the Bureau of Indian Affairs that would be doing that drug interdiction, their staffing is way down. Organized crime is preying on those tribal communities, and that's where they're basing their operations out of.
And you're seeing it in your tribes
as well.
We're
seeing that too, yes.
I want to, this is a huge topic, but I want to make sure I get to you on the issue of abortion, because, of course, the Supreme Court threw this back to state capitals in June when they overturned Roe versus Wade. Governor Burgum, the very last abortion provider in your state left after that Supreme Court decision. What has been the impact of that?
Well,
not having that care.
Well, in the case of this case, because the last one was in Fargo, it moved about 400 yards. It's now in Minnesota. So the effect of people having access to care is really
they
not,
leave.
Well, they leave, but they're going 400 yards further east. And I think this is a what will happen across our nation. It's now back in the hands of states. North Dakota has proven at the ballot box, the citizens voting. Our legislature very much is a pro-life with exception states. And so this is a something that the state of North Dakota has been pursuing for a long time. But as Chris was talking about in the earlier segment, this is something that I think states can decide. And I think it ought to be decided at the state level.
That's a long way for a lot of people to travel, though, if they're not in Fargo now. I mean, what has been the impact in your
state? We're seeing women all across America come to New Mexico, and it is a long way to travel. And what about aftercare? And what about your family? And what about the other potential family members, like other small children? It is catastrophic. This is where I think constitutional rights are a federal matter, making sure that wherever I live in this country, one country, that my constitutional rights, my bodily autonomy ought to be protected. And with all due respect for people who have who morally oppose my position on abortion, they don't have to seek that care. Mm-hmm. But women who need that care get limited or reduced or eliminated access, and women die all across this country. And we're going backward, and I could not disagree more with my good friend, Doug, about this being a state.
I want to ask you on a very specific issue how you are planning to spin this forward, because abortion's legal in New Hampshire, Maryland, New Mexico. The majority of abortions provided in this country happen via pill these days. And there's a Texas court decision that is pending that might strike down FDA approval, as I understand it. Are you preparing? Are you stockpiling the drug? Are you planning at all?
We are preparing. As long as I'm the governor of the state of Maryland, that Maryland will be a safe haven for abortion rights. I believe abortion is health care. This is really about how are we coming up with multiple ways of preparing for this and ensuring that all women know that we believe that their health, their safety, and their security and of the providers is something that should be guaranteed in the state of Maryland.
Are you stockpiling a drug or no?
We're not yet stockpiling the drug, but we are in preparation for
that. But I think that stockpiling might be, if I can push back a little, the wrong question. Do we have enough of those drugs available in places? And each state's going to be a little different, but you can get those in our public health system. We're moving towards tribal nations providing access in any number of ways, including abortion, direct abortion care inside a clinic, in addition. And the chilling effect of not having these medications now routinely manufactured is they're used to treat men and women for other, like bleeding ulcers. We're going to have deaths unrelated because doctors are saying, in my state, I can't prescribe this. So this decision could have an even more chilling effect. So we're trying to figure out ways. Can we get a manufacturer? How much do we have? How long does it last? What are we doing about contraceptives and contraceptive care and sex education and school-based health centers? So all of the above approach, we're in.
Governors, thank you very much for your time today. There's so much more to talk to you about. I enjoyed this. We'll be back in a moment. We find ourselves in yet another moment where global crises seem to be converging, and yet another reminder for us about how to put it all into perspective. Four times in the past 8 days, U.S. fighter jets scrambled to take out perceived threats tens of thousands of feet above North America.
That is a key kill. The balloon is completely destroyed.
The spy balloon and aerial objects are a dramatic wake-up call that the U.S. isn't quite as insulated or as isolated as many like to think. Record-level migration was already an unmistakable sign that failing governments, dramatic climate shifts, and economic strain thousands of miles away eventually end up on America's doorstep. As President Biden pointed out Friday, the two biggest democracies in the Americas both recently withstood insurrections staged by far-right mobs.
Both the United States and Brazil, democracy prevailed.
Democracy also feels under strain in Israel, where tens of thousands took to the streets Saturday to protest against their new right-wing government. Meanwhile, Ukraine's democracy continues its year-long battle to survive Vladimir Putin's brutal onslaught. NATO warned last week that China is expanding its nuclear arsenal, and so is North Korea. Kim Jong-un paraded a dozen intercontinental ballistic missiles down Pyongyang streets Wednesday. And if the food and migration crisis in drought-stricken East Africa wasn't already a sign of Mother Nature's power, she sent us another signal Monday. This one has taken the lives of 28,000 and counting lives in Turkey and war-torn Syria. For all of us, the ground does feel like it is shifting. Global instability may be a constant for the near future, and that may be a needed reminder to put our petty political disagreements in perspective. We'll be right back. This programming note, Caitlin Huey Burns and our investigative team unravels the mystery of who is George Santos in a new CBS Reports documentary that's available through our CBS News app. That's it for us here at Face the Nation today. Thank you all for watching. Until next week, for Face the Nation, I'm Margaret Brennan. Today's guests were Texas Republican Congressman Michael McCaul, Montana Democratic Senator John Tester, and a panel of governors, including Governor Chris Sununu of New Hampshire, Maryland's Wes Moore, North Dakota's Doug Burgum, and New Mexico's Michelle Lujan Grisham. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. This broadcast was directed by Shelley Schwartz. Face the Nation originates in CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com, and you can follow Face the Nation and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Face the Nation is also rebroadcast on our CBS News streaming network on Sundays at 1:30, 4, 10 p.m. Eastern, and again at 4 a.m. the next morning. And it's available through our apps, CBS News and Paramount Plus.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds, but none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.